Thank you, Hope, for singing that beautiful song. Isn't it a beautiful thought? You are for me. You know, I grew up in much of my growing up, it seemed like the God that was presented to me was a God that was mad all the time. And it was like more in my thought, I better watch out because if I take one step wrong, I'm going to be in trouble. Now that might just because my father was a very strong disciplinarian and we call God Father that I might have felt that way. But the reality is that we can say today, we know that He is for us. We know that even in our weakness, He never abandons us because He loves us. Amen. Luke chapter 5 is where we're going to turn this morning for our text passage. As I share with you this morning a message, I decided to title this message, I Like New Things, Do You? You know, in the typical Baptist church, when something new is proposed, you will generally have some that oppose it merely because in their own words, I don't like change. Rick Warren, in his book, The Purpose-Driven Life, would call those people at best caretakers, at worst undertakers. And usually the ones making the proposals he calls the risk takers. Any organization is in trouble if they get an imbalance in those individuals. Every church needs all types of individuals, but we especially need to be able to say, hey, it's okay sometimes for things to be new. I mean, when I asked the question, I like new things, do you? I was picking up here with a couple of the gals up here in the praise team. How would you answer? Well, I thought, well, I'll just ask a couple questions, and one of them was pertinent to how they answer. Ladies, this is not picking on you, just a quick question. Ladies, how many, and you don't have to raise your hand, I'm not taking a poll, but just answer it to yourself. How many of you ladies have not bought a pair of brand new shoes in the last 6 months? Okay. Now, you know, I'm you know, that's okay. Now, guys, before you say, yeah, you know, I tell her she needs shoes too much. How many of you hunters or fishermen have not bought anything new at the Bass Pro Shop in the last 6 months? I said Bass Pro Shop, didn't I, huh? That qualified you, right, Brad? Oh, yeah, I didn't buy it there. But the reality is, I mean, come on, let's be honest. I mean, all of us somewhat like new things. Even those people who say, I don't like change, buy new cars, new appliances, new clothes. I mean, today it's new iPhones, new iPads, you know? I mean, how many of y'all have before maybe gotten into a car, and maybe you hadn't bought it, but it was a brand new car, and you went, smells so good. I'm so glad you have the payment, not me, whatever may be the case. What I'm really wanting us to focus on this morning truly is in this passage. The reality is that Jesus himself says there comes a time sometimes when change is essential. Change is essential, especially needful, when an organization is not accomplishing its objective or being productive. John Maxwell says, if you keep doing the things you've always done, you will keep getting the same things you have always gotten. That makes sense, doesn't it? And this is great if you're seeing profits or progress. But have you noticed in the last few years, as I was growing up, if you said, hey, y'all want to go to KFC, everybody knew what you were getting. Because KFC did one thing and they did it right, and for years, that's all they did. In fact, how many of y'all remember when all of a sudden it wasn't just the original, but the crispy that you could get, huh? I will tell you, I still go to KFC for the original. But I also go on Tuesdays because you know how cheap I am. And on Tuesdays, they have this chicken fried steak special. Oh, I'm giving them free advertisement, am I not? And it's cheap, and I like it because it's cheap. No, I like it. Okay, Now, y'all, all you'll ever remember about this sermon is that you remember when the preacher admitted that he went and he bought the cheap chicken fried steaks. The fact is that over the last few years, KFC has, they have changed. It's not, I mean, when you go up and say, hey, I want chicken, you have to tell them what kind. Is it grilled? Is it the original? Is it crispy? Or do you want chicken pie? Do you want white or black gravy or brown gravy? You know, I mean, it changes. And the reason they had to change because they saw and realized if they did not change, things were going to go downhill. Southern Baptist, 80% of Southern Baptist churches are either plateaued or declining. And the reality is that we plateaued a few years ago, and over the last few years, we have been declining in at least numbers in Sunday school where we have usually tracked a church. And the reality is sometimes you have to say, well, is there a need for change? And I take you to Luke chapter 5 today because I believe in that passage we see a situation similar to what a lot of times we face today. And that is that Jesus was doing things differently than the traditional people. And so he gets into an interaction with them. In Luke chapter 5, verse 27, let's begin reading. The NIV reads this way. After this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. And Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect, the sect of the Pharisees, complained to his disciples, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking. Jesus answered, can you make the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days they will fast. He told them this parable. No one tears a patch from a new garment and sews it on an old one. If he does, he will have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one after drinking old wine wants the new, for he says, the old is better. Now, this is a passage that can be approached in many different ways, but I want you to see it basically as a paradigm for where we are today. The reality is that Jesus had come as a revolutionary leader, and he was running in this situation right up against the caretakers, the undertakers of his day, the people who wanted to make sure that everything stayed just as it had always been. And so I want you to see in this passage, first of all, their complaint. The Pharisees, the teachers of the law, those who were part of the band of the Pharisees, had words with Jesus. They complained, and at the heart of what they were complaining about was Jesus was breaking tradition. What was the two complaints they made? The Pharisees and the Sadducees, they complained that Jesus and his disciples were not doing what they ought to be doing according to their tradition. The first complaint was that Jesus' disciples were eating with sinners. Now, as I prepare for this, and I've preached from this passage before, I began to think about this dynamic, and the reality is that Levi was a Jew. And so were probably everyone that he brought to his house. It's not like that Jesus was breaking the Old Testament law of bringing Gentiles or going into a Gentile's house and eating. He was going into a Jewish home. But it was the home of a Jew that did not act or do like they did. In fact, because he was a tax collector and those that he gathered around them were deemed by the culture of that day as people who were outcasts, who were sinners. The disciples were and Jesus were being fussed at by the Pharisees because they were daring to eat with people that they ought not to eat with. Much like down through the years, you and I have had challenges, like I did in college when one day I was asked about mixing with someone of a different color, and because I didn't immediately say, absolutely, you can have no social actions with that person, I got a call to my college. My dean called me into the office on Monday because I had offended some people, especially one individual in that church that I was helping do a youth revival in, because I had broken what they, in their mind, was a social custom. It was breaking their tradition. And that's exactly what was happening here. Not only did they complain because it was eating with sinners, but they also complained because Jesus' disciples were not fasting like the other disciples. There was the perception of misconduct. Now, was there validity in the complaint? Should Jesus Christ and his disciples be eating with sinners? Should Jesus' disciples fast and pray? The answer to that question would have been, yes, they should have fasted and prayed. But the answer to the question is where we want to get involved in what Jesus does. Because the reality is that he responds to them. The perception is among some Southern Baptists, well, that church, that Southern Baptist church doesn't do things the way we do it. I wonder if they're really a true Southern Baptist church. They don't have Sunday school on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. They have what they call life groups. What is that? I'm sure you've never had that conversation with anybody. I'm sure you've never had anybody say to you, I don't know about that. I do know that a few years ago, a church in our neighborhood wanted to be part of our association. They applied. And when I talked to the chairman then of the church affiliation committee about why they were not accepted, the response I got was, well, they're not a Southern Baptist church. I said, really? Well, what is it that doesn't make them a Southern Baptist church? Now, I know I'm going to get in an area some of you are not going to like, but I'm going to get into it. He did not say to me, you know, they don't believe in salvation by grace through faith alone. He did not say to me, oh, they don't baptize by immersion. In fact, there was not anything doctrinally that he had to say was wrong with the church. You know what he said to me? They have elders. And they're not a Southern Baptist church because they have elders. Excuse me, when you read about the elders at the church in Jerusalem, what are you reading about? No, not you're talking about elders, not deacons, elders. Elders, plural. At the church in Jerusalem. The fact is, perception on that part of that individual was because they're not doing things the way we've always done it as Baptists. By the way, my response to him was, you know, one of the reasons I became a Southern Baptist, why I was drawn to it, because the work I grew up said they believed in the autonomy of the local church. You're supposed to run the church. Nobody from outside is to come in and tell us as a church. Y'all have heard that, right? Southern Baptists have always fought for that. We have believed that. However, in the work I grew up in, the people on the state level would come in and mess with your church. Since I've been a Southern Baptist church, I have never had a Southern Baptist director of missions or any Southern Baptist leader ever say anything to me about what ought to be done in the church that I'm pastoring. Because they know that's a sacredness that we believe that every Southern Baptist church is supposed to run according to the Southern Baptist church itself's decisions, including making motions about do we have elders or not have elders. Now, I know that's a controversial subject with some folks, but the bottom line was it was a perception, and that's exactly what was happening here. So here's Jesus' response. Jesus explains the disciples' conduct. Number one, he explains the fact that he and the disciples were eating with the tax collectors and the sinners because their target group was different than the usual. The Pharisees didn't want to have anything to do with them. But what did Jesus say? He said, it's not the healthy who need, verse 31, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. And yet you're trying to say to me, don't go and help the sick? He said, I've come to call sinners, not those that are righteous. If you're already righteous, you don't need me. But the reality is, and that was the problem, the Pharisees saw themselves as righteous based upon keeping the law because of all the rituals they were doing, and they saw the tax collectors and these people they were calling sinners not acceptable. They were sinners where the Pharisees were righteous. You know how the problem was that Jesus said, hey, my target group isn't to come in. I've not come to the temple to try to win y'all because y'all already are okay. At least that's the way you see yourself. And then he responded to the question about fasting. What did he say to them about the fasting? He said, listen to what he says. He says, Jesus answered verse 34, can you make the guests of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken away. In those days, they will fast. He said, right now, they're not fasting, but that's because, in our words today, he was saying, because right now, it's party time. It's like going to a wedding reception, and there being no food. When's the last time you went to a wedding reception and there wasn't any food? I mean, we've gotten so spoiled. Where I came from, a wedding reception was usually cake and punch. Do you know the first time I went to a Southern wedding reception and there was food? I was like, my goodness, I like that. You know, I'm cheap. I like free food. This is going to be the model of my message today, it looks like, huh? No, seriously. You don't, and this is the picture he's drawing. He says, look, right now the bride and the bridegroom are together, and it's a time for joy. But when the bridegroom is taken away, then there will be the time, and the time will be right. Not only that, but Jesus also was going to teach in his Sermon on the Mount that the way they practice their disciplines would be different. You remember in the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 6 where he says, you look, you're giving your alms, but the way you Pharisees are giving it is a way where everybody will see you give it. And when you fast or when you pray, you stand on the street corners to where men can hear you pray. And when you fast, you put ash on your faces and you don't comb your hair and you look like death warmed over because you want everybody to know you're fasting. You're doing it for outward show. You're not doing it for the right reason. My disciples will fast. But the proper way to give, the proper way to pray, the proper way to fast, or all of the disciplines that we involved in should be done in such a way that we are not bringing attention to ourselves. The disciplines are supposed to be bringing our attention to the Father. Amen? Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong for us to take an offering. It doesn't mean it's wrong for you to put an offering in the offering plate. But I noticed there somebody's already put one here. And you know what they did? They turned their envelope upside down. Now, there's nothing wrong with them having left it the other way. But if they had put it there and they had bold numbers and they wanted to make sure that everybody walked by saw it, what would they be doing? They would be giving for self-gratification. And Jesus said, listen, there's a problem. But then he goes on to basically say, listen, here is the issue. And that is that sometimes things have to change. Sometimes you have to do things differently. So let's look at the implications, the application to us today. In essence, what Jesus says in verse 36 and verse 37 is this. There's times when we need to retire used and ineffective tools. And he uses two illustrations. He says, listen, he said, if you have an old garment, and y'all, I have a shirt at home that I slipped on this morning. It is falling apart back up here, you know. I don't wear it out in the public anymore because Mary Jane would be ashamed if you saw me with it out. Oh, I love that, you know. But basically he says, hey, I've got two jeans I work in, work jeans. Got big old holes in them, you know. They're comfortable. I like them. They're my work jeans. I'm not up here preaching wearing them. But what he said was, when you have a pair of jeans that's got a big old hole in it, would you go buy a pair of brand new jeans and cut a spot out of that pair of jeans to put it on that old pair of jeans? In doing so, you'd be destroying the new, and it wouldn't fit the old. He'd be saying, here I am, here I am. Now, some of us who went to church, went to school, which I did, with patched jeans when I was growing up, that was a pretty common thing. The knees wore out, the jeans weren't worn out, we put patches. But can I ask you a question? Were you real excited to go with patched jeans, or were you more excited when you started the school year with the new jeans on? And Jesus said, look, there comes a time when the garment has served its purpose. And then he says, look, if you want new wine, now this is always a hard subject to preach to Baptists because I know you're not wine drinkers and connoisseurs of wine, but the reality is, if you want new wine, he said, you're not going to take that wineskin. Now, those that were here and watched two Sunday nights ago the movie, Risen, you saw a reenactment of what they would have. It was a leather pouch, a wineskin that they were drinking out of in that movie, showing that's what they carried. He says, now here's the issue. If you want new wine, you don't put new grape juice in an old wineskin. Because that wineskin has been already expanded and it has gotten old and it is going to be brittle. And when the fermentation process of the grape takes place, it puts off gases. And if you use an old pouch, if you're not careful, what's going to happen is that pouch is going to burst. And not only are you going to destroy the old pouch, but you're going to lose the wine. So what was he saying? He was saying this, and I used this Wednesday night when we were talking in church council. I used a quote, and one of our people almost fell out. And I don't know that I'm quoting it exactly right, but it's like this. If the horse is dead, dismount. Dismount. Jesus was looking at these guys and he was trying to say to them, here's the issue. Here's the issue. He was saying to them, seek new ways for a new product. Don't try to patch the old garment. Don't try to use the old wineskin. If you want a new product, you're going to need to use new wineskins. Hear me very carefully. He is not saying to them, change out of not using garments. He is not saying that you don't want the same product, wine. In fact, the last verse can really, really bother you, but I think he was just, if I could say it in a way, I think he was just kind of reminding them the reality of human nature. And that is, once you've tasted the old wine, you don't want any of that new wine. But here's the problem. If you're not making new wine, one day is not going to be any old wine. Does that make sense? If you say, oh, well, I'm not worried about doing whatever it takes to get new wine because, hey, I like it the way it is and I like the old wine. And what he was basically, I believe he was saying, it was a backhand slap to the Pharisees. He was saying, your problem, Pharisees, is you like it like it's always been. You want the old wine. You want it to be always like it's always been. And your problem is not right or wrong. Your problem is you're stuck with tradition. Now, I say all this to challenge you as a church to this fact. We have a God-given mission. I've wrestled with this, giving vision, giving mission to the church. And that is the buzzword, and please understand, I believe that it is absolutely positively necessary that if I'm going to remain as your leader, I must constantly keep you aware of the fact that we have a vision, we have a mission, but I don't have it. It was given by Jesus himself when he said in Matthew chapter 28, we are to make disciples of all men, of every nation, and we are to baptize them, and we are to teach them those things that have been taught. Our responsibility is to make new disciples. The reality is that in many cases, we're so afraid of new things when all we need to be asking is, if we do it a little different, will we reach people we're not reaching? If we keep doing what we're doing right now and we don't make any changes, what you're going to do is you're going to see around you the same thing you're seeing right now. The only thing is, we're going to all die off. And we're not going to be reaching the new. So you and I need to ask ourselves, is there some things God might want us to do? I am not suggesting to you that we ought not to do Sunday school. It has been proven years after years after years to be great and important. But here's the question. Maybe we need to do Sunday school, and then maybe we need to ask, do we need to do some life groups? Do we need to do Sunday Bible study outside of Sunday morning at 9 o'clock? You know? That it doesn't have to be at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. But are we reaching young people? Are we reaching new people? Are we reaching the lost? Folks, I could tell you, we could do some things to attract people from other churches if we changed just to be able to attract them. But would we be building the kingdom? The reality is our job, and what we're supposed to be doing is we're supposed to be reaching people and making disciples out of them. And to do so, we have to ask the question, can we do things a little bit different to reach them? Maybe we need to do some things that we're doing differently even than we're doing it now. Wednesday night, the church council discussed something that we know another church in our community has done and we feel might be a positive move. And that's instead of our second worship of the week being Sunday nights, maybe do worship on Wednesday nights. You know, when we were doing strategic planning, one of our strategic planning task force members point blank said, 6 hours after I've worshiped on Sunday morning, I don't need to worship nearly like I do maybe 3 days later. And so we agreed, we felt like it'd be great this summer if we would try to just not do Sunday night, worship, but move it to Wednesday night. And instead of doing what we've been doing, come in here on Wednesday night and worship. By the way, there's some pluses and possible products of that. The youth have one of the best Wednesday night crowds. That's their largest crowd. Many of their parents come to drop them off. They might would come in and worship with us if we had an opportunity for them. How can we improve what we're already doing? How can we change what we're changing? Here's what I ask you to pray with me about. And I'm not suggesting to you wholesale changes of, oh, well, we're not meeting on Sunday morning. But here's what I ask you. How are we going to get new wine? Sometimes, if we're not careful, we fall into that category of the caretakers and the undertakers who want to say, I just want to keep it like it always been. I want it to be like it's always been for me. When in reality, what we're saying is, I don't care about those that we're not reaching. And we're not asking the question, why are we not reaching them? We're not reaching them because we're not making an asserted effort to get outside the walls of this church and to get where they are and to bring them to Christ. What do we do and how do we move from here? What do we do? You might say, well, right now I think we need to fire the pastor. You might need to do that. But what you cannot do and what we cannot afford to do as a church is to be Pharisees who say, we like it just like it is. And we do not want to change and condemn those who are doing right things to reach those who need to be reached. So what do we do? Here's what I'm asking you to do with me this morning. I'm asking you to do as I'm trying to do as a pastor. And that's not change the principles or truths of what we believe. By no means not to change the doctrinal statements, but to ask God, how do we get new wineskins? In what ways can we change in order that we reach those that we're not reaching? Yeah, I know you're going to be here because it's comfortable. It's where you've chosen to be. It's the way you like it. And some of you say, yeah, and I'm not going to like it if it changes. Well, let me ask you a question. Is the object of the church for you to come through the door or for us to put people in that baptistry? If we're not seeing the baptismal water stirred regularly, are we doing God's will? You can read, you know, yeah, we are in the fact that Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 and 25 says, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. But it doesn't stop there, by the way. It says, when you get together, provoke one another. I'm trying to do that today. I'm trying to provoke you. I'm trying to provoke myself. I'm trying to say to you, there's no new wines coming through our ministry right now. When's the last time those waters were stirred? How often do we see people walk in the aisle and saying, I want to be part of Emmanuel Baptist Church? But more importantly, when's the last time we had someone come down and say, Pastor, I found Jesus Christ this week. One of your church members is one of my fellow workers, and they told me about Jesus, and I've received Him as my Savior and my Lord, and I want to follow Him, and I want to be part of this body of believers.